Good evening and welcome to Good News Updates from Living Compassion. My name is Michael Gray and I'm excited to be joined tonight by Sandy from San Diego. Welcome, Sandy.
Thanks, Michael.
It's great to have you on the air.
Thank you. It's kind of exciting to be here.
Great. I was noticing the energy in my body as well. I'm very excited.
Yeah, I have energy.
Good. And I understand that you're going to tell us about some very exciting work that you've been doing over the past couple of years.
Uh-huh. Well, part of the reason I have such good energy today is that, you know, we have an annual yard sale, and this year we just finished our fifth annual yard sale to benefit Living Compassion.
Uh-huh.
And I still keep getting checks and thank you cards in the mail, and so it's really just wonderful. Today, someone who came here and worked very hard all day at the yard sale, which is like about 9 hours straight, sent me a thank you card saying, thank you for allowing me to be part of this dream. Isn't that wonderful?
That is amazing. That is wonderful.
Yeah, and the money keeps coming too, which is very nice.
That's great. So this is the fifth annual yard sale that you've held in San Diego to benefit Living Compassion.
Yeah.
And what was your inspiration to start this?
Well, in a word, desperation. because it was a time when Living Compassion wanted to start their work in Africa, and they wanted us all to be helping raise money. And I could not find the willingness to ask people for money. I just couldn't go there. And so I was desperate to find some way to help raise money without having to ask people for it.
Wow.
And, yeah, and it just, I don't know, came to me that why don't I try a yard sale? And the more I thought about it, the more I thought, well, let's make it so that people donate all the goods, the people who come and buy it donate all the money to buy it, and I don't have to ask anybody for money.
Wow.
And out of that came this.
That's really exciting. You say desperation, and what I also hear in that is a lot of willingness.
Yeah, well, it felt like desperation, and but I've in the long view, when I look back, I say, wow, yeah, there was a willingness to try something, to try something.
Yeah, I can see that for myself, that there's a lot of willingness to want to contribute in a variety of ways. And I can see how conditioning will come up and want to block that. And it sounds to me like there was a lot of persistence there on your part on wanting to contribute.
Well, you know, yeah, there was a certain amount of persistence, but it's like the first time I opened up my mouth and said, oh, we're going to do this, I don't know, all these people got behind it, and before I knew it, it was happening. And it's had that kind of energy all along. And the persistence really has to do with not listening to all the ways I could talk myself out of doing this.
Yes.
And there's a long list.
Wow.
Yeah.
And it's so exciting to me because, as you said, this is the fifth annual.
Isn't that amazing?
So, you know, you have shown up and shown up and shown up and shown up year after year.
Yeah. And there's another thing. It's kind of like I followed a particular bent of mine, which is I love recycling. I love the fact that something that would go in the garbage could be used by somebody, or, you know, it's kind of like I feel like Rumpelstiltskin, you know, you take straw and you make it into gold. And in this case, it's really true. The first year that we got donations from people, because everybody has too much stuff, Linda and I, my partner, we looked at it and we said, should we just take this right out to the trash? We can't get money for this. And I said, well, you know, let's put it out. If we have to take it to the trash, we'll take it to the trash at the end. And I'll be darned. We got money for it.
Yes.
And it just went on. And I get to stand out there and tell everybody about what's happening in Africa and Living Compassion and what we do. And It's amazing what happens from all of that.
It is really amazing. And as you said, one person's trash is another person's treasure.
Exactly. Yeah, and we've definitely proved it.
Yes, yes. And I saw, I'm not sure if you saw in your email inbox today, I received an email from Living Compassion with some great pictures and a little story about your yard sale.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it's just, there are a million of those stories. That's how it feels, you know, and the day just flies by, and at the end, people have given us all this money and taken away all this trash. It's great.
Yes. And I love the story that was included in the email about the, I think you said a neighbor of yours came over during the day and you told your neighbor about Living Compassion and the Africa Project, and she went to the website and learned about it and came back with a big check.
Yeah. Yeah, and interesting, because when I was telling the story to some of the people who had helped out during the day, one of the stalwart shows up year after year helpers said, you know, I was thinking when you were telling that woman about going to the website, why does she bother? Nobody's going to go to a website. You know, I don't know why she bothers. And then I showed her the check and she said, whoops.
Yeah.
I guess so. All of those things kind of pull together and help it happen.
Yes. Yeah.
To me, it's so
exciting that you do this over year after year after year. And to me, it's a big, you know, inspiration for all the rest of us who want to make our contribution in whatever way works for us, you know, to see you out there year after year, excited about the projects, wanting to contribute and putting this on.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because usually soon after the yard sale's over, I get this sort of a little bit of a letdown and a feeling of like, well, you know, if you don't raise enough, if you don't do a lot more money than last year, then why bother? And, you know, all that kind of voices come in. And I don't think my friends would let me not do it. That's where it's at right now.
Yeah.
Because they have so much fun. And
wow.
Yeah. So
wow, that's exciting.
It's become its own thing.
Oh, wonderful. And I don't know if this is your experience, but, you know, when I tell people about the Africa work or show them the website, you know, it's just like pure goodness. It's so heart-opening and rewarding. It's just, you know, how can they not be moved by it?
Well, that happens over and over. And we have another little added one to this. Every year there's some kind of wild thing that happens. And this year someone donated and only worn once wedding dress with a 6-foot train and all of this. And so we couldn't bring it down to the yard sale. It was just too beautiful. So we're going to try and sell it privately and send the money on to Living Compassion. So, you know, all kinds of things happen.
That's
it's just, yeah, and it's now it's like it's proven to me that I can do something I like doing and help too.
Yes, yes, yes. And it sounds like you've proven to yourself that the voices are often, if not always, irrelevant.
And dead wrong.
Yes.
Dead wrong, yeah. But, you know, it seems like it's an everyday challenge to pay attention to that.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. That's my experience as well. And for me, it's really helpful to be in Sangha, in community, and be reminded regularly about what's possible for me, for all of us.
Yeah.
And to me, you've shown that to us in spades.
Well, yeah, it's quite a network. I wish I'm speaking for just tons and tons of people, and that is the heart. Part of the heart opening, you know. I mean, I know what good it's doing in Cantaloupe, but among my friends and my friends' friends and all of this, it's just this big, big, widening, ever-widening circle. It's really nice.
Yes, yes, that's my experience of it as well. And it occurred to me that as you're planning for this next year, you could give people a little link to this recording. They wanted to hear about the yard sale and what it's supporting and all that.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, there's another good thing to add to the list. Yeah, and like I said, we're not done yet. It kind of has a momentum that keeps going for a while, so that's really nice.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Sandy, thanks so much for joining us today. It's been really a lot of fun.
Thank you.
All righty. Take care.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Goodbye. Good evening, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good evening, Sherry.
Good evening, Michael.
How are you?
First thing I want to check is if the sound is okay. I'm on a new device, and I want to make sure that I'm transmitting properly.
Wow, I can hear you loud and clear.
Okay, great. Well, then, if that's the case, wow, that was so inspiring.
Yes.
I knew about this sort of. I've known about this for a while. You know, we always wait for the totals of the San Diego yard sale. You know, with bated breath, and it's just such an amazing community endeavor. And but listening to Sandy talk about it, sort of like being there. So that was very fun. And, Michael, this is not going to, I don't know, I probably shouldn't say this on the air, but you won't take it on unless you just want to. But it did occur to me that it would be very fun if we did a Palo Alto Zen Center yard sale on the same day as the San Diego yard sale.
Wow. Wow.
Wouldn't that be fun?
That's exciting.
Get
That's
Sangha in the Bay Area to all come together in that same sort of way, and
yes.
And who knows? The San Diego team could start a whole movement across the U.S. and we could join in.
Well, that's what just occurred to me. Why let us have San Diego and Palo Alto?
Mm-hmm. So, that's fun.
Great.
Yeah.
How are you doing today?
Wonderfully well. I leave tomorrow, and then I actually tomorrow evening, and then I fly on Thursday to New York.
Yes.
And about 45 minutes ago, I finally found a place to stay. So
yes,
I'm pretty excited about that.
Yes.
Now, it never occurred to me that a city the size of New York could be sold out.
Yes.
Of rooms.
Yes.
But I came perilously close to finding out that that could be the case. So I'm in kind of a state of relief, and now looking forward to, on Saturday I'm at Integral Yoga Institute in Manhattan, and then start my little Pennsylvania tour, go to Harrisburg for an evening and back to Pittsburgh for an evening, and then we do our annual Pittsburgh retreat. So that I'm looking forward to that. Get to see a lot of. We were just in North Carolina, and got to see so many old friends, and got to meet a lot of great new people. And I'm looking forward to the same thing, a little farther north.
Great, great. That's exciting. The annual Pennsylvania Pittsburgh swing.
Precisely. Yeah, New York, Pennsylvania. One of these days, I want to add Philadelphia. I'd actually like to find a place. I know Dave has worked on it a little bit with some folks in that part of the world to find a retreat place that would draw people from Philadelphia and New York City and like that.
Yes, yes. Philadelphia being a little closer to New York City than Pittsburgh is.
Yeah. I don't know why, but Pittsburgh seems a very long ways away for people in New York City.
Yes, yes, yes.
I suppose because it is quite a long way away.
Right.
So we're just so used to this. Go down to Southern California, but in other parts of the country, that would be – you'd be crossing several states to accomplish something like that. So,
yes.
Anyway, that's what I'm up to, and I'm looking forward to it.
Great, great. That's exciting. Sherry, let me give out the phone number here. We'd love to hear from you today. The phone lines are open. The number is toll-free in North America, 888-4SANGHA. That's 888-472-6442. Again, 888-472-6442. Jerry, we have... Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to ask you how you are.
Oh, I'm good. I'm good. I'm,
you sounded great as you were talking with Sandy. I just really thoroughly enjoyed your conversation. I am such a talker that I don't get to hear that much from you unless we're on retreat together.
Yes.
So it was very fun to listen to your interview.
Great, great. Yes, and as I said last week, and every chance I get, it's a great privilege and a great luxury to be able to do this.
It is. I'm right there with you.
Great, great.
Sure. And, you know, probably, Michael, more than you, I get to hear, and I probably, maybe I'll start taking notes or make little hash marks in my day timer or something, the people who express appreciation for the show when I'm out traveling about. Just an awful lot of people that we don't actually hear from because they don't call in. It's probably time for us to start our campaign. You know, if you listen to the show and you haven't called in, please do so at least once, because, you know, as soon as they do it once, then they realize it's not as scary as it seems before doing it. But just an awful lot of people who talk about listening to the archives on their way to work and how much they enjoy having access to Sangha in this way through the archives primarily, at times that work for them. So I probably get to hear more of that appreciation than you do. So I'm going to start being more diligent about passing it along to you, because you're doing a great job.
Great. Thank you, Sherry. Thank you. Sherry, we have a caller. Okay, next caller, you're on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Cindy.
Hi, Cindy.
Calling from Hillsboro, Oregon.
My goodness.
Yes, it is a thrill. We've relocated from the Bay Area, and it's an absolute thrill to have moved and still have Sangha.
Isn't that the best? I know.
The best.
I know we can sound a little commercially sometimes, but it's only because we are so happy when people do have that Sangha practice opportunity in their lives. So between the radio show and Reflective Listening Buddies, you know, people really can stay connected, even in faraway places like Oregon.
It's been, you know, I remember when my husband first said that he had this opportunity to relocate, and I said, sure. Of course, the next thought was, oh, my gosh, I'll be moving away from the Palo Alto Zen Center and the monastery. How will I do this? And then, in fact, it's actually been quite seamless. It's just like you said, these other support opportunities are just there for you, and if I can't be home for when the radio show's on, I can listen to them on the podcast, and it's just the best. So, you know, thank you, and thanks. It's been a great, smooth move, and it's been great to have practice right along with me. It hasn't really felt like there's been a bump. It just felt like just plugging along.
Good. That's wonderful. That's wonderful. So life is good. In Hillsboro, did you say?
Hillsboro, just outside of Portland.
Okay. Beautiful part of the country.
It certainly is. Certainly is. So I'm calling this week because a long time ago I told you I was going back to get my master's degree, and I said that I had a lot of conditioning about schoolwork, and we both agreed that at the end of the day, if I never got my master's degree, but I was able to see through my conditioning to do with my schoolwork, you know, that would have been that. You know, pursuing the master's degree would be considered a success. So
yeah.
I'm about halfway through it, and I have been seeing more and more and more and more about the process. I wanted to talk about what happened last week as I was finishing the last paper of one of my courses. And so what I have, my experience with it is I always have done well at school, and there's never really a question about, well, some maybe part of me is worried about it, but intellectually I've never not done well, right? So I kind of know that if I put in the time, it's going to be fine. It's not really a concern. But what it is, it's like I'm going along and I realize that I have to do something, and I know that in order to do it, I will go into this like this black hole of intense thinking and working. And at the end of it, everything will be fine. I'll get a good mark, but I don't want to go into the black hole because it's so stressful. It's stressful. It's very intense.
Yeah.
And so it's not the usual school thing because people say I was afraid that I would fail. I just don't like going into the hole.
Right.
But,
so I can only guess that there was a time in your school career when you didn't actually know that you didn't have to go through that process to do well.
Right.
That, so there's all this anxiety and intensity and, you know, how's it going to go and am I going to make it? But you're to the point, you've done this for long enough and often enough, that you know you're plenty smart enough and you're going to do well. So all of this black hole stuff is useless and irrelevant. Am I understanding?
Right. That's correct.
Yeah. And so now is what you're looking at, how not to do that?
Yeah. So even though I know all that, as you just described, in the past, I mean, again, there's been huge progress made. Number one, that I'm pursuing my master's degree. I mean, I dropped out of university after 2 years because of this. So the fact that I went back to school 5 years ago, finished my Bachelor of Arts, and have now pursuing my master's degree, that in itself is, like, extraordinary. Okay, so, you know, okay. So we're talking about levels of awareness here, okay? So I'm acknowledging all the things that I have, where I was and where I am now, but I do want to talk about where I am now. So I gone back to school, and initially I would be trying to, I would just be in the throes of it. I would do it, but it was just so intense, and I was, you know, I'd say I'm not trying to choose suffering. This feels like it's choosing me, like I had some kind of thing going on. So I went through all that. I would try to meditate and be aware throughout the process. It was extremely painful. And over time, it's become less painful to do it. And
so the same process goes on, but you've brought enough awareness to it that you're not suffering over it in the same way.
That's it. Okay, that's it. Except that is exactly it. When I was doing this last paper, everything was exactly the same. Nothing really has shifted. I mean, it is, it's hugely intense. And I just have some separation from it now where I see it going on, and I know that when it's going on, what I have to do is, you know, every hour I come, you know, my little vibrating watch goes off and I come back to the breath for 10 breaths. And I have this whole thing to support myself through it. And so to the extent that I'm able to do it, to come away from that momentarily, that's extra, huge. I also, when I'm not working on it, if I say, like, now we're going to go out for dinner, now we're going to do something, even if the project isn't done, I can actually, my mind actually can shift. It's sort of in the back of my mind, but it used to be that that's all I could think of. It's like, why bother going to dinner? Because I can't think of anything else right now.
Oh, my.
So, again, so I'm at this thing where it's easier to let it go off my mind.
Yes. Yeah.
But, okay, so, again, so huge progress, and that's what I was telling myself through this last thing, like remembering so vividly how it used to be. But through this last paper, of course, I thought, but why is it so still so hard? I mean, what is going on with this? But it's still so hard. I mean, there's no question it is hard. It's not just like, it's the whole time trying to do the paper with this stuff. You're trying to write a paper. You got like all this other stuff going on. It's like managing you're managing like a three-ring circus while you're trying to concentrate on something.
Uh-huh.
So,
and the three-ring circus, now, that's the black hole.
Mm-hmm.
And what does it consist of? What is it that you're managing?
There's a sense of overwhelm. There's a sense of overwhelm that, I know that I can do this. Yes, I know it'll be fine at the end, but I'm at the beginning and I have to get to the end. And there's just this giant...
And is there conversation with it, or is it primarily on the sensation, emotion level?
Oh, that's a good question. The recurring conversation that comes up with is, which is to me obviously self-hate, the recurring commentary is, this shouldn't be taking so long. I mustn't be doing this right because who takes so long? You know, there's this constant this is taking so long. Why is it taking so long? I must be doing something wrong if it's taking so long. So that's a conversation that's there all the time. Now, whether or not, apart from that,
okay, so. Now, are you through for the semester?
Yes.
Yeah. Can you take a summer class so that we can work on that?
I'm not taking a master's course this summer, but I will be doing some more papers for some other stuff I do. So, yeah, there will be
other
opportunities to...
This is what occurs to me about it, that this would be a great... content, a great piece of content for process mapping.
Right.
And what I saw when you were talking was that to do your process map, it would be very good to get a piece of that black, I don't know what it's called, if you're going to mount a picture for some sort of conference or something like that, there's this kind of spongy black paper, thick like cardboard.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, they'll have it at your local art store.
Mm-hmm.
And get a big piece of that so that you're very clear that all of this is happening in the black hole.
Very good, yeah.
And I say that for two reasons. One, that it will be, I'm not sure there are two reasons. When I think of them, they both seem the same reason. But it gets it out of you. It takes it out of something that it kind of sounds as if when it's going on, you're living inside it. And
yeah.
It moves it over somewhere where it has a shape and a size. And there it is. There's the black hole. And then you start putting things that exist in the black hole, So it'll be in the form, of course, of post-its still because it's process mapping, but you're putting them where they belong, in the black hole. So it's when I kid people that writing something down is an automatic disidentification because you get at the length of your arm away from whatever it is when you get it out of your head and put it on a piece of paper. So that's that's what this would be, a process of disidentifying from it. So rather than you're in it and it's swimming around you every time some piece of that comes up. You take it out of you and put it where it belongs, in the black hole.
Okay, so A, that sounds like a fantastic idea, because when it was happening, I did think, how come I can't think clearly about it? And I did have this thought, it's because I'm in it. So the reason I had a sense of exactly what you described, that the reason I wasn't getting any clarity on what was going on or what I should do, or, you know, it's because for some, I was inside the reality of it, and the, everything, it was making sense in there. So I had a sense that's like, oh, well, at some point I'll be outside of it and I'll feel this more clearly, but right now I'm not outside of it, I'm in it. So, you know, the logic of it, the logic of the black hole is the logic within which I'm trying to find a solution, you know. So,
precisely. That is brilliant. That's exactly it. The Einstein quote about we can't solve a problem with the same mind that has created it. That's it.
The only thing that, the other thing I wanted to ask about is when I'm in it, you see, I am so in it. So when you say, like sometimes when I'm process mapping something that's not so, you know, so big for me, I see, there I am, there's me little chugging along, and I have, oh, there's a thought, there's something to cross. There's sort of like little blips that I can pull out, put in a piece of paper and stick them up and then look at them. When I'm in the black hole, it's like every single thought is a mess or something. I tried write it down while I was in it, and it was like I had like reams and reams of stuff. It didn't make me disidentify. It stressed me out, actually.
Well,
you know,
the thing about it is you can introduce the two-sentence rule. So the voices can give you information twice, and that's it. So it will take you a little time to get the hang of this, and I would encourage you to work on your paper in the, like have your desk there and have the black hole next to the desk. Okay, so so the thought comes through, and you can write it down. You know, why is this taking so long? Okay, and then you put it up there, and there, you write it big enough that you can see it. Now, the next time it says, "Why is this taking so long?" that becomes a flag for you to wake you up. Okay, so you're actually training yourself. Because, in truth, voices like that say about six or eight things. They just say them over and over and over, and they have a little variation on them, but it's the same information.
Right. Now, as we're talking about it, you know, I am very willing to do this. I'm just conveying what's coming up as we're talking about it. As we're talking about it, of course, what the black hole, because I go into it, it's like, wait a second, it's already taking me so long to do this thing. I don't have time to also do this.
That's right. And so you write that down, and you put that up there. Okay?
Right,
good. Now, we've established that. We don't need to say that again, because what takes time is having that conversation. And the more you do this, the more you're going to see, and you already know it intellectually, but the more you're going to see in the moment that where your time is going is to that conversation. That if that conversation weren't going on and you weren't being distracted, you'd be cranking right through whatever it is that you need to do. I need for you to get a paper, just volunteer to write things for somebody, so that you can try this out, and then let us know what happens.
Okay?
And we'll fine-tune it.
Okay.
Great.
Sounds like a report back.
Yes. Oh, yes, please. Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Cindy. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Michael.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Cindy. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, that was fun.
Yes, that black hole idea is great, and I really, I mean, I think a lot of us could benefit from looking at it that way, because it is an energy, conditioning is an energy black hole. But to get things out there where you can see them with a specific, you know, specific content like that is so great, because it, we really can, before long, start seeing how it just repeats and repeats and repeats and repeats.
Yes, and I love the idea of using that black board, whatever that stuff is called, to put it on.
Yeah, somebody will tell us.
Right, right.
Foam board or something, some darn thing.
Yes. Sherry, the phone lines are wide open, and I mean wide open. So let me give out that number again. It's 888-4-SANGHA. We'd love to hear from you today. That's 888-472-6442. Again, 888-472-6442. We look forward to hearing from you. Sherry, we're going to take a quick break here, and then we'll be right back.
All right.
Hello, my name is John March, and I'm the leader of a music project called the Zen Blues Quartet. For the last few years, this collaboration of some of the best musicians in the world has been gathering to record and perform as a way of showing our gratitude and love for the music of the blues. For myself, as a Zen student, I see a direct connection between playing the blues and awareness practice, because for me, both seem to require a willingness to be really present in the moment. Zen Blues Quartet is proud to sponsor Open Air Talk Radio with Sherry Huber, as we firmly believe that the quality of your life is dependent on the focus of your attention.
What a life, what a life, my life, what a life, what a life, what a life.
Please visit us at www.zenbluesmusic.com for more information about our project.
Welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, I have an email question here.
All right.
Oh, and I just saw a caller pop up. So why don't we go to the caller first?
All right.
Yay. Next caller, you are on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Rico in California. Can you hear me?
We can.
Hi, Sherry.
Good evening.
Hi, Michael. Hello?
Yes.
Hi.
Hi there.
Well, Sherry, I guess it was about 6 weeks ago I was online with you, and we had that good cop, bad cop conversation.
Yes.
And then I had a few words with you in Berkeley after your talk there. And so that's sort of the thread of my call. And I was listening to the previous caller in her black hole.
Uh-huh.
And, what it's like for me is... I was educated by the nuns, the Sisters of St. Joseph and Catholic schools,
uh-huh.
And it was kind of like a no-win situation, because they would tell us to close our eyes after lunch to rest, to take a rest, and then it happened to me where I'd get whacked pretty severely with a ruler for going to sleep and disturbing the class with my loud, heavy breathing. So it's almost as if there's no way to win this, and
uh-huh.
So my basic practice is profound gratitude for everything, and I have no complaints, and with the slightest provocation, it's almost like there's this thug waiting. And so I bring compassion awareness to this. And
yeah, Rico,
yep.
May I? There's this, are you saying T-H-U-G?
Yes.
Uh-huh, okay.
Thug. So I'm just aware of loving compassion and supporting myself and mentoring myself. And also it takes just extraordinary vigilance. It's not exactly like walking a tightrope wire to avoid getting thrashed by the voices, but it's like I have this sense that the voices are always in the wings.
Yes.
And I was curious about any kind of guidance or commentary or...
Well, I agree with you. They are. Karma seems always to be waiting to assert. And I'm not certain if I would say that, let's see, the way it seems to me is that when we are not attentive, when we go to sleep or become unconscious, then conditioning is able to simply slip in because there's sort of no one there minding the store.
Which I get that. I see that.
Yeah, which is an interesting thing to look at next to something that seems is very much my experience, and that is that at the deepest level, what animates us, what human beings are, is good. And so it seems as if the way it works, that there is that inherent goodness, and then what gets layered over that is this egocentric karmic conditioning. And it seems to, you indicated that this was happening to you at a fairly young age. So by the time we're able to really have a sense of ourselves or think about, look deeply into ourselves, it can appear that the deepest thing that we run into is that karma, that egocentric karmic conditioning. So it can appear that that's actually who we are, which I think causes a lot of people to be afraid to look inward, because the assumption and the information that conditioning is happy for us to believe is that it is who we are, that it is us. So it takes a lot of looking and paying attention and practicing, at least in my experience, to be able to begin to discern the difference, to differentiate the difference between the intelligence, the conscious awareness that animates us, and this layer of egocentric karmic conditioning. So when we are, now, the next piece of that is that it seems to me, that authenticity never demands. It's just, it's like a backdrop. It's like, it's the ground of everything. And so it doesn't assert itself. It is everything, but it doesn't assert itself as anything. And so when we look, that's not necessarily what we see or experience, because there is this layer asserting itself. So when we're present and we're conscious, we have a sense of authenticity. We can feel that that's who we are. When we go unconscious or get distracted, then it can seem as if what we are is that influence that is asserting itself. So the way many people, of course, experience that is through the conversation that we're always pointing at. You know, the voices in your head that are talking to you. The voices in your head that are talking to you, and that, again, until a great deal of awareness practice and paying attention, one believes to be oneself.
I get that.
Yeah.
So there's a flip side to my call, and that is through good grace or good fortune, I've had this inclination to meditate and to do deep spiritual practice for many, many, many years, and it's rare that I miss a morning, and I don't have a job, and I get to sit quite a bit. It's just profoundly wonderful to be able to just stop and sit, just take a cup of tea and sit and to sense myself. And it's as if on several times in my life, on a retreat format, I have what I would describe as a direct experience, and I truly get the authentic goodness, the authentic freedom, and yet of myself, and I can contact that regularly in my sitting practice.
Yes.
And yet the part that I'm seeking guidance, particularly today, is sometimes I elect to go unconscious. It's not like I find myself going unconscious. I said, okay, if I could do a little psychodrama, one voice would say, okay, we know we are eternity manifesting in a particular mind body. We know that. We know there's no worries. We know the stories are full of hot air. Okay, so now let's just go do something dumb. It's not dumb, but that doesn't support the consciousness practice, the awareness practice.
And let me ask you this: are we talking about something that is harmful, or are we talking about something that just wouldn't get a lot of votes for truly conscious behavior?
No, I wouldn't say it's harmful. But and again, it's not like there's a judge up here or a Zen master in the wing saying, you know, that's not what a good Zen student does. It's not like that as much as, well, an example for, I had a wonderful relationship, and it kind of surprised me when that broke abruptly 18 months ago. And so now, even though my basic sense is I feel complete, I feel whole, I feel grateful, I have a wonderful life, I feel that I want to get a girlfriend. And so I noticed myself giving a lot of energy to say, well, it's not like I need a girlfriend to be complete, but wouldn't that be nice to have a companion? I'm getting tired of my own cooking. And so the contradiction is that in my sitting practice, I feel so deeply complete and whole, and yet there's this hankering for something more on a human level.
All right. So it's interesting. I mean, I hear different things in different parts of your sentence. And so when you say there's a hankering, I get little flares coming up with that one. Because, of course, it's perfectly possible to, as you say, feel complete and whole and just simply want, in the sense of it would be enjoyable, it would be pleasurable, it would be fun to have a relationship, a particular relationship. That's one thing. A hankering.
Well, hankering is not the right word.
Okay.
It's not neediness, and it's not lust. It's more like companionship, and wouldn't it be nice for companionship?
Yeah, and so yes. So there's to me a big difference between. You know, I'd like to go to the movies this evening because I'd like to see blah, blah, blah. And I just want to turn on the television because I can't stand to be with myself any longer. Those are very different life experiences. Now, if we just got on the content level, you know, it's a square and there are things moving on it and it's made up and it's a story. Okay, so they seem to have a lot in common. The motivation that the person is bringing to it is dramatically different. So that would be my encouragement to you, to look at that. Who is this person? You know, get to know the guy who is interested in having a relationship. What's that about? Does he just want any relationship? Does he want a particular relationship? What is that going to do? Where does that leave everybody else? Because oftentimes, of course, you know, somebody wants a relationship, and then everybody else who lives in the house actually doesn't. You know that one?
Yeah, yeah, I know that one.
Yeah. And so just to explore it on that level and begin to sense whether this is something that's just coming from a guy should be nice in the sense that in the same way that it would be nice to go for a walk outside on a beautiful spring day. Okay, great. Or is there something more driving it? Is it actually more along the lines of escape and distraction and something that's going to ultimately lead to some kind of unhappiness? Is it coming more from a karmic pull or push, or is it just something that arises in the in your life as in the same way that you might suddenly decide that you'd like to volunteer at the library?
And you think it's clear-cut whether it's either or can it always be?
I think it's always worth exploring.
So the exploration would be like a journaling, or what would be your suggestion?
Yeah, watching, seeing what the self-talk is, seeing when it happens, when this arises, what's going on a sensation level when this arises. You know, people will want to eat sugar. There's no harm in sugar at all. It's really interesting to know when they want to eat it and how they want to eat it and what the self-talk is, you know, what the motivation is, how do they feel before, how do they feel after, just to know everything that there is to know about what's going on with us, not in an intellectual analyzing way, but in a paying really close attention because this is somebody's life and therefore it's important. And in addition, it's really interesting.
Well, what's a little a red flag went off in my head about the self-talk of the story, which is what's confusing me a little bit, Sherry. And that self-talk would be the happiest I've been in my life is when I've, I mean, truly the happiest, most ecstatic has been on retreats. In
yeah.
silence, alone, and I've been very, very fortunate in my life to do extended retreats and also in foreign countries, and my heroes, you know, my heroes in my life are people who mirror the monastic model.
Yeah,
and
so I'll tell you when a little flare went off for me was when you said, well, is it cut and dried? Is it either or? Is it? Now, that I projected was from somebody who was a little nervous that all of this paying attention could interfere with his plans.
I don't follow that.
Well, that rather than, yes, okay, well, this would be really interesting. This is as interesting as if I were in a workshop and I got an assignment to write down all of the most important ha-has of my life, that would be interesting. It's a workshop. I'm paying attention. I'm seeing something about myself. I'm learning how this works. When there's a sense that somebody is not as interested in the process as they are in the content.
Oh, I get it. Okay.
It always flags me that perhaps somebody is already in place who has a particular interest and is pursuing that, even though there's a veneer of either way, everything is fine. So, you with me?
Yeah, yeah, I get it. That's good.
Yeah. Okay, so that's your assignment. Then you'll let us know, huh?
I will.
All right. Thanks, Rico.
Thanks, Sherry. Bye-bye, Michael.
Bye.
Goodbye. Thanks for joining us, Rico. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have a couple more callers, and we're going to talk to them just after this break.
All right.
Porchdog Software is proud to support Open Air with Sherry Huber. For more years than we care to mention, Porchdog has been writing Windows and Mac software for customers big and small. We're pretty good at what we do, and we always try to remember that what we're doing is never more important than how we're doing it. Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
Welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have two more callers.
All right.
Next call, you are on the line, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Rebecca from Austin.
Hey, Rebecca.
Hey.
What's going on?
Well, I was sitting here whenever there were no callers, and I was thinking, well, this is crazy. I've got to call in. Because I was noticing that today there have been a lot of voices. See, tomorrow is my birthday. So there have been a lot of voices going on kind of all day thinking, is anyone going to remember my birthday? Am I going to be lonely on my birthday? Is anything, you know, just kind of all of this really a fear of being overlooked and forgotten. So I thought, well, hey, I can call in and tell Sherry this is going to be my birthday and give myself all kinds of recognition that I'm having a special day tomorrow. And so I just
Happy birthday in advance.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
And are you letting other people in your life know that this is coming up?
Yes, I am. So I'm kind of and I've planned a great day for myself tomorrow. I'm going to go look at some art downtown at an exhibit that I've been wanting to do, and so it feels like I'm just really taking care of myself.
Uh-huh.
And I wanted to, to also tie in the fact that it's a big day celebrating my life and everything is. So much in gratitude for the practice and how much I recognize that this has literally, I think, saved my life. I just want to say that and express.
So it's a double celebration.
It is. It is.
Yeah.
Very much so.
Well, good.
Yeah.
I'm glad, and I'm really glad to hear. That you are taking responsibility for making sure, to the best of your ability, that you get what you want.
Yeah, isn't that great?
It really is.
It is such a relatively new practice for me to do that, and it feels like. Really being a grown-up, you know, being someone who's planning the party, not who's kind of waiting patiently, hoping longingly someone will plan the party for her.
Yes, and really living in a place of fear, anxiety, and disappointment in preparation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and total powerlessness.
Yeah, and with a sense that if it doesn't go the way I want, then it'll mean this and that and... My life will be this way, but instead to say, okay, it's a party.
Yeah. And you know what?
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, and not only that it'll mean this, but it'll mean this about me.
That's the absolutely
whole self-absorbed kind of part of it all.
Yes. And it's so funny, isn't it? Because, you know, generally speaking, we don't sit around and think about the special events in the lives, even of our loved ones.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we can love people a lot and not necessarily have that translate into, this happened and therefore I should blah, blah, blah. Maybe a handful of people, But we don't have to, I think for most of us, we don't have to go very far out in our circle before we're just actually not doing that.
Yeah, you're right.
And yet, if it's us, and it doesn't mean, you know, it doesn't mean that you don't love me, that you forgot that it's my wedding anniversary,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, or that it's the birthday of my oldest child, whatever
yeah.
it is.
Yeah.
But I could get that going.
Yeah, quite easily. And so it's just, it seems like such a short circuit of the whole system to just take responsibility and do something where the material to get it going isn't even there. It's not even allowed to kind of get generated in the first place.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Because instead of moving automatically into that victim place that conditioning wants people to live in,
mm-hmm.
you move into an empowered place. Hey,
mm-hmm.
somebody I love is having a birthday. I want to make this a grand occasion.
Yeah, yeah. And you know your memorial that you did for your birthday. I think it was about 5 years ago, right? Could it have been that long?
I'm afraid so.
Wow! Doesn't time fly when you're having fun?
It
but
does.
Yeah, but that was one. That was a really powerful example of that. That kind of moving into a place of that it's absolutely okay and even beautiful to celebrate one's own life.
Oh, it's just the craziest thing. I hear it all the time from people. You know, so and so is sick. So and so is. It's usually an elderly parent, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But not always, you know, and they're, you know, well, are you going to go, well, no, I'm going to wait and I'm
yeah.
going to wait and go to the funeral for heaven's sake.
Yeah.
That's
crazy.
That's not meaningful. So why not have a big old celebration for people, when they can be around to enjoy it and take it in? I just think it's a
yeah.
way better way to do it.
It's a win-win for everybody.
It really is, because, again, I think all of us know that place of wishing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I know for myself. I was 18 when my mother was killed.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, my gosh, you know, the mm-hmm. things that I wish I could have said to her.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just, you know, simple things like, gosh, thanks for,
mm-hmm.
you know, this and this and this and this that you did for me and for my life. And
yeah.
you know, my apologies for being such an opportunity for so much of that time that we had together. But, you know, boom, it's over, and there's no chance for that.
Yeah.
And, you know, that happens all the time in people's lives. So I think we should just not wait for those kinds of unfortunate conclusions when we can do something different about it now.
Can grab it now and can invite other people into that kind of celebration place too. So
absolutely, yeah.
So I'll be celebrating.
So one of those. It's my birthday and I'm having a party. No, no, no! Don't bring anything. Just yourself. After all, it's my birthday.
Yeah.
I'm the one who's celebrating. So you all just come over and celebrate with me.
Yeah, I'm coming over because it's my birthday and I'm bringing lunch.
Exactly. It's my birthday and I want to spend part of it with you, so
yeah.
I'm bringing lunch.
Yeah,
so, exactly.
That's exactly what I'm doing tomorrow. So
that's fabulous.
Well, thanks for being there and for celebrating with me.
Happy, happy day. We'll be thinking about you tomorrow.
Okay, thanks.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Rebecca. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have one more caller here. We have
about
6 minutes left.
Okay.
Next caller, you are on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. It's John in Los Angeles.
Hey, John.
Hey, how are you?
Good, you?
I'm well, thank you.
Excellent.
I'm well. In fact, I can say that honestly. I've been in physical therapy for 1 week now, and I'm improving, so I can say.
I tell you, when I heard you say that, I what went through was, I hope he's being honest about that. I hope it's not just a, I'm fine.
No, I can.
You're
I can
really doing well.
To you, I won't ever respond that way to you.
Okay, good. Thank you.
I did have a guidance question for you. In practice for me, For quite a while now, I've been in sort of really challenged by my conditioning, and what I really have come to observe as my tendency, my predilection to try and understand things and reason things out and kind of use my brain to figure things out. And that's, I think, conditioning's biggest hook for me is to kind of grab me.
For a lot of smart folks.
Yeah, I'm coming to realize that smart doesn't help a lot. So
yeah.
I
although we suspect the more we pay attention to it, it really is a help for conditioning.
I'm finding that, and it was interesting listening to the caller just before about his, what I hear, my predict, is the idea of integration, how one sort of integrates practice into life, because I think I've talked to you about this before. That's, for me, in secular life, there's so many distractions and hooks for conditioning and content that I get caught in and worries and stories that one of the practices I've taken to recently is as a lot of thought forms start swirling or arising, I actually, like, and prevent me from taking action, I kind of ignore them and just take the action. In fact, it's become almost a cue for me that I know that I should be doing what I need to be doing when I hear a lot of dialogue arising.
There you go.
But I'm not sure I'm not, well, again, here's a great conditioned voice coming up. There's a sense of abdication for me, that I'm sort of abdicating a sense of purposefulness, like to actually intend to do something. I'm just sort of going and doing it. I don't know
if
that makes sense.
It's a subtle place to me that you're looking, and it's one of those strong arguments for really paying attention.
Okay.
Because there's the impulse to do something. So I'm guessing that something simply arises in your conscious awareness to do.
Yeah.
And it could,
yeah.
It could be an intuition. It could be an insight. It could be inspiration. It could be just whatever. But suddenly it drops in. And then, and there's an impulse toward it. Okay, yeah, that sounds right. That's, yeah, I want to do that. That sounds good. And then the voices kick in. Is that kind of how
it
goes?
Well, I mean, it's a somewhat more mundane almost to the, you know, like if I've done my physical therapy in the morning and I know that I have time to take the dog for a walk in the afternoon and go for a little bit more air or walk, and the voice kicks in, oh, you already did your physical therapy this morning, you don't need to go for a walk, I'm kind of ignoring that and going.
Absolutely. Because, you see, it's that, now, that is, we consider walking the dog mundane, but the process of it is exactly the same. It occurs to you to go for a walk and take the dog. It just arises in conscious awareness. And when we pay attention, now, this is the kind of thing that we are conditioned to think of as thinking. So you had a thought. But if you're paying attention, you did not have a thought. A thought is something, is more along the lines of, I see the refrigerator, it occurs to me to get something out of it to eat.
Right.
Okay, or it's the repeating conversation that Cindy was talking about earlier.
Yeah,
that sort of thing. But you're just going along and it just drops into your awareness. Ah, I could go for a walk and take the dog. And then the conversation starts. So for me, and now this is where you want to pay attention, because conditioning will also try to get in the act very quickly. But what you're doing is just not responding to the voices, not engaging with them. I mean, obviously you heard them. You're not engaging because it's a, yeah, well, but, and that we know is not an authentic piece of information. Yeah. Any sense that starts, well, but, is not authentic. It's not anything we need actually to entertain or attend to. So you go with the with what was offered to you. Go for a walk. Take the dog.
Yeah. And I see it translating into, I mean, it's coming out of a long sort of depressive cycle and sort of this sense of being immobilized in small actions. And generally the small actions are little victories, because it's those actions are without engaging in the dialogue.
That's right.
And it's not, but the thing that, I guess the guidance I was calling for was, is something to continue paying attention to, obviously, but is it a consistent good practice to just ignore the dialogue, the conversation, and just go and do the thing?
In my world, without fail.
Okay.
Now, remember a little bit ago I cautioned you that conditioned mind will try to get into the act.
Yes.
So it will try to start slipping things in as if they're just intuition, intuition or insight or whatever. And so you'll be watching for that. But you will catch it because there's just a different tone to it.
Mm.
Fresh. You know that a fresh mind is the one that has the, I could go for a walk. There's a brightness and a spontaneity that is never going to come from conditioning.
Yeah. This whole thing started from that thing of emptying my cup for the teacher who says to the person,
yes,
you know, your cup is full. And
yes.
I was just trying to reason all this stuff out, and I decided to empty the cup because I can't.
Just throw it all out. If you make some kind of a big mistake doing this, which I think I can pretty much guarantee is not going to happen, but just in case, because that's the kind of thing conditioning wants to scare us with. You know, well, you're just going to do something impulsive and, you know, you're going to go out and give the house away or something, and then you're going to be in big trouble. Well, you're a big boy. You'll be able to deal with the consequences of following your heart.
Okay.
Which is, I would say, what you're practicing.
And I'll continue to try and do that. Thanks.
Excellent.
Appreciate it a lot.
Oh, great talking with you. Take care.
Take the shoes, Sherry. Bye.
Thanks for joining us, John. You've been listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, thank you very much.
Thank you, Michael. The only thing we want to encourage people is call sooner.
Call sooner.
Yeah, earlier in the show, because then we consistently come down to the wire. Although I thought the timing was fine,
yeah.
But it's, you know, it kind of heats up as things go along, so we have to encourage people to call in earlier, sooner.
Yes. Kind of like that voting phrase, vote early and vote often.
Yes.
Call early
but
and
only,
call often.
But only once per election, right?
Once per election, yeah.
Yeah, all right.
Thank you, Sherry.
Thanks, Michael. Good night.
Good night.